The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
It is so great to be with you on Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio. My guest today is Walkeria Cash, the headmaster at a local school, Calvary Orlando Christian Academy, and she's been here in the States for a number of years. We're going to hear her story. So I'd like to say welcome, Walkeria.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Such an honor to be here and being blessed of how God is doing such a great movement for Orlando.
He's doing it not only, and of course, we're not only in Orlando, but this show airs in Gainesville and in Ocala and the Villages. So all of these areas are getting to hear your story today. And you're also part of this thing that we have in Orlando that is such a blessing. The Christian Chamber is very effective and very wide-reaching and I think very influential, and that's kind of the source that I met you in.
Yes, it's been such a blessing to get to know wonderful brothers and sisters, business partners and business owners that have been an encouragement for me to say, hey, go out there and fulfill your God-given call. And that's what I'm doing right now. So it's being, I feel adopted, embraced, and loved by them. And I know that whenever I may have those difficult times, you know, I can reach out one good brother, sister, friend from the chamber.
It really is a wonderful thing to have. And it's really difficult to just tell about it. It's something you almost have to experience when you're there. The friendliness, the welcoming, the hugs that people give, it's very unique, and it's not like a typical business meeting for sure. Yes. I often say this, it's much more like a family reunion.
Yes, and I feel like that every month. We also have the Friday fellowships, and for me, it's kind of like the reunion every week. And I wish I could go every single week, but it's so great to always have, friends plugged in and say, hey, you hear about this? You know, this is such a great support. You're welcome to come and join us. So free open invitation.
That's wonderful. Them. Well, you've been in the States now for well over 20 years, about 24 years, I think you said, around the year 2000, 2001 or whatever, and you came originally from Nicaragua. So how is it that your family, I know you mentioned there's a Jamaican tie as well. Tell us about your family background.
Well, I am one of those people that I was in my happy little world in Nicaragua. I was 15 years old. When I was told by my grandparents, hey, you're going to move in 30 days.
30-day warning.
Yes. And wow. I was like, excuse me, I am having a very busy high school social life here. and 30 days later, March 30th, I remember like yesterday, I had to take an airplane and meet my mother in South Florida. So it was very challenging for me because I always been embraced with lots of family, lots of cousins. My grandparents were my parent guardians for over 8 years. So they were my parents, and I just loved to be around them. And coming to the United States all alone and just mom and I, it was a quite drastic challenge for a teenager.
Sure. Yeah. Now, you said you and your mom, what was she doing at the time?
My mother back in Nicaragua was an executive director at a very big company. And here, in order to, I will call, quote unquote, survive, she had to pretty much do everything as far as even making tortillas in the local shop.
Okay.
Cleaning offices. And I was pretty much raised through that kind of hard labor, two, three jobs through the week. It was challenging because I remember that I would spend my afternoons always at the halls of offices, you know, while she was serving and working until 10, 11 p.m. and then try to get the bus and go back to our little efficiency. And it was so rewarding for me to appreciate what my mother's sacrifice was made by the end of the day, because he actually encouraged me to study, you know, more and be more curious about education.
Now, you were young, you were 15, so that was quite a change. And a lot of people, that's not unusual at all to hear stories about young people who are not wanting to move at all. If they're here in the U.S., let's say, when they're in high school, and a lot of parents will kind of defer making a big move until their kids graduate because of the fact that it is upsetting to one's schedule. Mm-hmm. Here you are, you're 15 years old. You're maybe halfway through your high school experience or whatever.
It was quite a challenge for me because back in Nicaragua, I was in private education. Only girls, like only girls were allowed. Mm-hmm. It was a very strict system. Discipline and priorities were always set up first. And then my mom put me here in public school, and I was like, what in the world is all these people
oh my goodness.
Walking around and
that
trying to
a
take
big
a break?
Yeah.
So it was very challenging for me because I had the opportunity. God gave me the opportunity to say, hey, it's time for you to really put your self-discipline out there and apply it for yourself. So I was a junior in Nicaragua, and they backtrack me here in the States to a sophomore just because of
1 year
my
back.
Language.
Yeah.
Yes. So I didn't speak English back then. It was challenging.
Yeah. That's a big change. Now your family stayed there, right? Your
90%.
Extended family?
Yeah, 90%. My extended family still there. I have few family members that have scattered around the United States, but I'm still like the one few family member here in the state.
And would you say that you really didn't want to come to the United States at that point? Would you have preferred staying back in Nicaragua?
I would have if I had the chance, but God definitely had a plan for me. And
yeah, I think that's awesome.
I knew back then there was a God, but I truly, you know, did not know him back then as my Lord and Savior in a true relationship. But I knew that there was something else out there for me to do. And to keep my story short, in high school for me was very difficult.
I bet.
It was
making a transition like that, especially with the language barrier.
Yes, I was placed in what they call ESL, English as a Second Language. Mm-hmm. And I was very underestimated just because I was Hispanic descendant. But there was an amazing mentor teacher that really inspired me. And he was a Cuban American descendant coming similar from where I was going through. And he really had faith in me. He walked me through endless tutoring sessions and just adopted me as, you know, his own child and pretty much encouraged me to move on and to do the best I could.
You know, when I think back to times that I've been in other countries, I've been to a lot of Spanish-speaking countries. And when I'm there, I know only enough to make me just really get lost. You know, I can recognize a few things, but to carry on a conversation, no way. So for you, what do you remember in those early times when you were here? What kind of frustration did you feel in your heart about just general communication?
Well, more likely, I would say the culture. I was raised by elderly people, so respect was such a big deal for me. I love people, and I like to respect their well-beings and the way they really have their priorities in life. And here was difficult. Everyone was treated the same, and y'all. And it was challenging because I was like, no, you don't talk to people that way. No, you don't talk to your instructors that way. This is disrespectful. Oh,
isn't
my gosh.
That something?
You know?
Yeah. You have that observation coming from a country and a surrounding culture that really was different.
Also, having the total freedom of making your choices, your own choices, as, oh, I will see some kids skipping school and classes. I'm like, oh, I don't feel like going. And I was like, what is wrong with you? You gotta graduate, you know? And I was, yes, I admit it. I was the kind of kid that I will sit at the front, in front of the rows, like right in front of the
You're
teacher.
Good student.
To kind of ignore everything because it was about that season of my life. So priorities.
Yeah. Now, were there times that you were like, Lord, what is going on? Or mom, what in the world are we doing?
I did question my mother, coming from a single parent life. I questioned her a couple of times as far as, hey, what are we doing here? You know, we have all this family back home. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, you got a great support system.
Yeah. And I had a decision to make in my life, the hardest decision ever to make in my life. As a young 17-year-old, between your parents. My father is a very wealthy businessman in the West Coast, and he gave me the opportunity to choose whether be away in the West Coast area or
the West
just
Coast
stay with mom.
Of Florida or West Coast United States?
West Coast United States.
Okay,
California.
California, okay.
And it was the biggest decision ever made as a 17-year-old. And I remember I kind of like went in a quiet, my quiet bathroom, and I was like, what should I do? If I go with dad, I will not have to deal with all this.
Mm-hmm.
If I stay here, I have to deal with all this.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually decided to stay with mom, and here I am.
That's
sharing
something.
This beautiful account. So God had a purpose.
Now you mentioned that you knew that there was a God back before you came here, maybe even as you came to the United States. Obviously, there was something that happened in your life where it became much more real, much more meaningful, and you had an actual encounter with God. Tell us about that.
So my grandmother, she was a devoted Christian. She loved the Lord. I could see it as a role model example. My entire family was Catholic, but not practicing. So for me to go with my grandmother to church every Sunday became meaningful. And it was challenging for me in an 87 percentile Catholic, you know, indoctrinated, family member that had to follow some rituals and this and that. And I always questioned myself, why do I have to go towards a priest to really confess what I'm feeling, you know? So I had those encounters of, non-practicing faith. And then my grandmother, I remember clearly, she always been there in my life. She was my first best friend, and she always prayed for me. And she said, you know, God has a plan for you. God always has a plan for you. I just want to let you know that. So pretty much I became kind of like my grandmother's self-image of God has a plan for it. So I started hearing God because of her. We'll sit down and read the Bible to her, but as a young child, would not comprehend deeply. And I remember like hosting Christian teas and all these fellowship gatherings almost once a week, every Tuesday afternoons or Thursday evenings. For me, it was fun because I could serve a lot of people and hear about this quote unquote Jesus, you know, who's this guy, you know, in a deeper level. But I truly gave my life to Christ when I was 19 years old, and I was fully aware who he was. He wanted to be my best friend. He wanted to let me know that everything will be okay in the assurance. But the early life credits of his existence, I give it to my grandmother.
Wow. Now, your mom, tell us about her. How did that work out for her? She's working in Florida, and you mentioned South Florida. How did you get up here to Central Florida?
Well, it's a quiet journey. I came to a place where it was very cultural, and I did ask my mother the first year to move because I love changes. I am not afraid of moving forward things and try new things. So I encourage her, you know, in my early youth years to, hey, maybe we want to move forward. She was afraid. She was afraid of changes. She did not like it. She wanted just to keep me, you know, closed up into the environment where I could continue.
In South Florida.
In South Florida.
Wow.
But the Lord opened actually many doors as a senior. I did not know that you could pass a test. And not exactly pass a test, but do a couple of testing and have college recruits come in to see you. And I had a couple of them really strong and interested on me. And I got a couple of scholarships as a senior. And I remember clearly I came back home and I look at my mother and I said, guess what? I'm moving. Would you like to go with me?
So wow.
So I pretty much gave that step to her because otherwise she wouldn't make that call. She was terrified that no one would understand her or, you know, be nice. She just wanted to protect me, and I became my mother's protector.
Wow. At a young age. I mean, that's amazing. Now, all of this, you're still learning the language in all of this time here.
It's a lifelong, I would say it's a lifelong learning because for me to be at that such young year, spend 3-4 hours at a local library, at a local museum, and just try to absorb as much as possible. It was quite challenging, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being around people that provided positive feedback.
Yeah.
And I was always hungry to learn. So I would say it's my lifelong learning language, and it's my third language. So it's fun.
That's really great. Now, I know that. What college, I know that you went to a college. You've obviously got scholarship offers. Where did you end up landing?
It was challenging. One of the hardest part was choosing in-state, out-state. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my academic advisor was like, well, you're really smart and you can go here or you can go there. You can go to Washington. You can go to New York. But my heart wanted to be closer to my mother and closer to, you know, Florida until, you know, the Lord calls me for the next step season. And I got a scholarship at a couple universities in South Florida, including like Florida Atlantic University. I remember I got a couple of private school ones like Nova. And eventually, it's funny, I am an Equal Administrator. So I accepted a presidential scholarship and a very honor scholarship from DeVry University. And they were like, well, you can be the first pioneer at the network administration program in South Florida. And I was excited. I was the only female in that group. And it was an honor, too, because I was a minority. And it was so amazing to really see how the world of guys worked back then.
Well, Carrie Cash is my guest. She's the headmaster at Calvary Orlando Christian Academy, and we'll be back with her in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd.
If you're a Christian business person and you want to meet people who want to do business with you, you need to join the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce. Why? Because the mission of the Christian Chamber is to build kingdom, business, and community. And it all starts with the Christian principle of building relationships. To learn more about the Christian Chamber and all the different ways you can get engaged with hundreds of other Central Florida Christian business people, visit cfchristianchamber.com or call 407-258-258.
Back with my guest today, Walkeria Cash. And Walkeria came from Nicaragua. This is such a great story of a young lady, obviously taken out of what was for her a very familiar, very comfortable, very, I think you could say, desirable background that she was having right in the middle of her high school career. And her mom up and announces that they're going to be moving. And
yes.
Not just moving, but they're going to be moving to the United States.
Yes.
And that was a big shock, I know, to your system. Now, a lot of young people would have liked that. I got the feeling that that was not the best news for you initially, at least, right?
It was not. I was very involved in my previous institution back there. I was there for 12 years. So mm-hmm. I know what is a long life commitment, you know, as far as being there for since my kindergarten years. And I was the president of the SGA, what they call here. I was also the director of band, the captain. It is funny, it took me 6 years to get there. So it was very exciting for me to listen to beats and music. Fine arts was always my fascination.
Mm-hmm.
I was always participating on contests and art shows, and I just love thriving back in my old school. So it was challenging for me just to be taken away from all that and just be alone.
And I think a few people that if you've never made a move, a big move where you're in an entirely different area and you don't have that network of friendships or family members, you had your mom, but everybody else is like a new challenge. It's a new opportunity to learn. That's not the easiest thing to do.
It is not. I challenge, I got the challenges actually of what they call today's day bullying. It was one of my biggest challenge. People underestimated me a lot. Just maybe the way I spoke or I looked. Some people will say, "Oh, you look Islander." I'm like, "Yeah, that's 25%."
Yeah, that's right, Jamaica.
So
right,
it was challenging for me to describe who I really was, my true identity. But when I, accepted the Lord as my savior, I really found my true identity. So it took me 19 years.
That's quite amazing to me to see that you've, in that 19 years, you came to that place, but you also came a lot farther in just general education, learning the language, learning to thrive as you did. Obviously you did, because you went on and gained quite an education to the point now that you're leading a school. That's pretty crazy.
Well, I was given that opportunity to endeavor and pioneer the Negro administration in South Florida, DeVry University. So I graduated there.
From DeVry.
From DeVry. It was an excellent experience for me. I actually served full time as I was serving in there to pursue my education. I was quite like the girl behind the professors, learning the do's and don'ts. And whenever they needed any support, I was around them. I moved on to Florida Atlantic University and pursued my second degree in there. And it was challenging for me because it was a bigger university.
And this would be for your master's?
No, actually for my bachelor's degree.
Oh, okay.
Number two.
Number
so
two, second bachelor's.
Yeah, it was challenging because I was in between. People wanted... It was a kind of like, oh, you fit perfectly in the techie world. You fit perfectly in the fine arts world. So I listened to a lot of good advice out there, but I wasn't surely clear of what I really wanted to do until probably my fourth year. I realized that I was very good teaching others, but I had the gift since I moved to college, because I was always around my instructors, teaching them and showing them how to set up everything, running the labs. It was quite interesting for me. Good experience.
That's great. Now, fine arts, I got to ask the question, what was your specialty in that?
Well, my fine arts is in art history. So I love anything that is related to what had happened. In order for me to really, truly sink in, I have to really travel and live out loud what my history books and my art history books were all about. And it was fascinating because I could leave every single page. My instructors back in college wanted me to be an art history major and kind of like be the kind of person that travels and explained at high-end museums, everything. But I did not truly feel called to do it. I just still stay in my little mindset that, hey, I'm going to finish a program, but I don't know yet. I don't know yet. And it's okay. You know, it's okay.
Now, at that point, you still had to have kind of like an overwhelming future ahead of you education wise, because to do what you're doing now and you're getting a second bachelor's, you still have some other degrees to earn, right?
Yes. I remember clearly like yesterday, I had such great opportunities, internships to really move into the world of technology. It was always fascinating. I did telecommunications too, and it was an amazing experience. But I actually did at least 2 years at it was like my local tutoring site in Miramar, Florida. And I used to do tutoring, teaching SATs, proctoring.
Wow.
What a lot of kids don't do, do they say?
No, they don't.
And kind of like doing ACT, SAT. Mm-hmm. I did not know back then that it was such a big, you know, future that God had for me.
I don't think you had an idea that your brain was quite as big as it is.
So it was quite funny. It was quite funny because I enjoyed it. So I enjoy having like almost as old as me, kids kind of like, hey, and you're teaching me this? Really?
Really?
And I was like, yeah, I am your proctor for the whole 6 months. You know, it was challenging, but fun. It was a fun experience. And that's what I truly found out, that I enjoy teaching. Mm-hmm. I was passionate to always find ways to help that person learn better.
So many people are kind of critical of the public school systems in America right now. And I think for a lot of good reasons too. Here you are, you're coming in from Nicaragua. You've got the big language barrier, which obviously you were overcoming from day one.
Yes.
From the time you've been here. And at some point you had to be able to say, all right, I am leaving the worry about that one behind, because you've moved on. And now you're conquering things that a lot of people who did not have your background, they were born here, but they don't have the drive and the zeal and the respect. You mentioned that earlier too, that you've had. And I think that has served you well.
Well, it was quite rewarding for me to see all that from day one, coming from a third, you know, a world country. Mm-hmm. Poverty in Nicaragua is over 65% right now. I was considered, still in the poverty rate. And I could not see it until I visit United States. I was like, wow, how can you waste this plate with food? You know, so it made me appreciate, respect people better too, in all directions. And I never change my ideas and bringing up, because I love people, but I also love the way they have something to bring to you every single day.
And I get the feeling that you also have a real heavy respect for the right kind of authority in your life, that those places like your teachers, you've mentioned that, and your mother, which even though there were some differences of how you would have wanted to have turned out, and you also respected and made that decision even with your dad, who was 2,500 miles away, 3,000 miles away maybe. And so all of that's going on in you while you're learning all of these things. And then top it off, you're really growing in your relationship with the Lord.
It was challenging for me, being an early, I called myself back then baby Christian, because, you know, the world press you, hey, you missed this opportunity. What are you doing? You know, the enemy is so clever, digging right there in the heart. But when you make a decision and you leave it out to the Lord, he knows what he's doing. And even though you may not know it at that moment, I decided to trust him. I decided to really let him be my pilot, my pilot to continue navigating me through this beautiful journey, what I call a short life. And then someday I will have to thank him as far as what he had really done every day of my life here.
Wow. And where did you go from the last school that we left off? How did you get on to where you're doing what you're doing now?
Well, I went to four schools. Okay. My first school was Zavarra University.
Yeah.
My second school,
Florida Atlantic.
Florida Atlantic. I was a teacher for, you know, continuous years, but I always knew that there was something missing out there for me. I married very young, and I met my best friend, still back myself in college. He was already a graduate student, and professional, young professional. And I said, you know, I really feel that I'm missing something. And he's like, what are you missing? I mean, everything is fine perfect.
Yeah.
I said, no, you know, I felt like returning back to the classrooms and learning more. And that's what really thrived me to do my master's degree in education at Southeastern University.
Okay.
And back then, being a mature Christian, I wanted to really have Christian education.
And that's Lakeland. So that's
in Lakeland. Mm-hmm. And I met wonderful people. I don't know if you know, but there was a wonderful lady pioneering the doctorate program there. And it was the first year that they were doing the doctorate program. So I was pretty much like the last graduates from the master's in education, all program. And for me, it was a lifelong learning. They gave me 4 years to really endeavor my education. I got accepted. I was shocked because I was like, well, it's been 6 years, you know? And I got accepted by them saying, hey, we really see what you have done. Here are the options. And I did my program in 2 years instead of 4 years.
Wow. Okay. My judgment of the brain size was accurate. I see that now.
Well, I did it because I was very encouraged. I had back then my little girl. It was the blessing from the Lord. She was a little baby girl. And I said, if I do it now at this pace, I kind of like sat down and kind of like map myself out. And I was like, let's do it this way. Well, Kyria, put it together. Three courses. Oh, this is going to be done. So 2 years.
Wow. That's great. Now, yeah, that's school number three. Yeah,
school number three. And so right now I'm still in school, which is a blessing because Pensacola Christian College said, yes, we want you to do your PhD program in education and leadership with ministry. And that for me is an honor because I am in a season of my life of, you know, still discovering what God's grace is all about and his amazing love for me. But wow, I thought I couldn't make it after 7 years.
Wow. That's amazing. So a PhD program will culminate when?
Well, I have 7 years, Mike, to go, which is which is quite a long time, but I am learning as I'm going. My goal and purpose is to really make long life friends and people that can really say, hey, this person out here did it with now pushing. And that's what I love about PCC. They encourage you, not push you, but encourage you with the word, hey, you are a God-given design. Let's do what you're meant to do.
You know, this is why I was so excited to have you here. I had no idea, though, of just how amazing this journey has been for you. But it has covered the entire emotional kind of focus from a young girl not wanting to come to all of a sudden you're thriving in not one but four schools. And you're on your way now to get a PhD. We'll be calling you Dr. Cash.
I know. It's kind of awkward because there's only one Dr. Cash in the whole family from my dad's side.
Oh, yeah?
And that turned out to be my auntie. So I'm kind of like, yeah, that's a good example.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great. And I know that at some point you got introduced to the school where you are now. And that's where you're serving. And it's from your church kind of as well. It's Calvary Chapel. That is the background, right?
Well, it is a beautiful journey to say that I joined Calvary Chapel in 2006. My family and I were very blessed to have such a great home church and fellowship. My children grew up in there. Our teaching Bible principles come from those foundations of a word by word, chapter by chapter, who truly God is And even though we're not affiliated with the Calvary Chapel Ministries directly, I have a high respect and deep love of what the Lord have really called me to do, which is do the same thing, one child at a time.
Wow, one child at a time. And that's at Calvary Orlando. And this Christian Academy is on the Edgewater Drive area, right, of Orlando, right?
Yes, we actually serving our local Lockhart neighborhood in Orlando, Florida. Such a blessing because 5 years ago, the Lord gave me that vision and that moment to really, you know, pin out Orlando, center middle of Orlando. And if you look at the map, Mike is like right there quite some in the map, middle pin of Orlando.
It really is.
And we're so excited to serve many families that want to be shepherded through his word.
And my wife and I live right there in that Lockhart area as well. So this is something to get to meet you and to know this ministry is going on. And Walkeria has been, again, here for the past, what, almost 24 years now, right?
Yes, 24 years as of March 30th.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Which just passed.
Here we go. Well, it's April Fool today.
That's right. That is crazy. Well, Carrie Cash is my guest today, headmaster at Calvary Orlando Christian Academy, and we'll be back with her in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd.
Join host Mike Gilland for The Shepherd at Work every Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m. You will be introduced to a marketplace leader that will help you learn to walk out your faith wherever you live and work. The Shepherd at Work is sponsored by the Central Florida Christian Chamber, building kingdom, business, and community throughout our area. That's The Shepherd at Work, this Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m.
It is my joy today to have Walkeria Cash with me. She's the headmaster at Calvary Orlando Christian Academy. When you know you're in the middle of God's will, doors open. And that's what's happened for Walkeria. Doors have just opened for you, and you found favor. And even though I think your story is one of great inspiration, because you overcame so much, a lot of people would say, there's no way you should be doing what you're doing in such a short, relatively short amount of time. But it's because God's hand has been upon you.
Well, when I became a believer, I realized that God had a calling for me, had a special plan for me. And at a very young age, I knew that I needed to prepared myself for that calling. And this is actually my 20th year in education. I started very young, and it was, for me, so rewarding. I did so many years. You know, when people say, oh, K through 12, I literally, except for one grade level, I have done all of them.
Wow.
And it's been such a blessing to see the do's and the don'ts and how relate to that young mind, that young, you know, younger side, young mind, rebellious side of children. And it was very rewarding for me to see that today's day.
Now, you meet a lot of kids in your work. You have, without a doubt, come along a lot of them that did not have that early respect that you had for authority, for your family members that were older. Mm-hmm. Kids today in America often are kind of almost led the opposite direction. They only relate to peers. And yet, I know you see that, but you have remained positive. Now, quite frankly, I've talked to a lot of teachers that are not nearly as positive as you. How do you say, what is the reason for that?
Well, I will say when you have a big God that can overcome so many obstacles for you, there is nothing quite impossible that he cannot overcome for you ahead of the time. I had very difficult children. I had children that did not know authority, children that came from many broken families.
And you're talking about students that you've had. Yeah.
And it was very sad for me to see how over the years it has become a bigger and a bigger quite ratio today's day. And it's not the children, you know, they're just a reflection of where they're coming from. And it just keeps me, I would say, humbled. So that's the other reason. You have to keep your mind positive that God can do all things for you, but at the same time, be humbled. You can't fix everything.
Yeah.
You just need to
have that pace
for the Lord to work on them.
Do you think a lot of teachers may internalize it too much, like it is up to them?
I was a micromanager teacher. I am absolutely guilty on that area. I remember when I first started in education, I actually started my career in charter school. It was interesting doing my internships and everything. And I was like, you know, that's kind of mine. Yes, I'm going to be the one everyone in power. Yes, I'm all about it. And then by the second week of school, it's kind of like, oh, this is overwhelming. How many children I have? Oh, my goodness. So over the years, I realized that ratio was a challenge, and it became the micromanaging into kind of like more micromanaging. Mm-hmm. And as a coaching educator, I can tell you that that doesn't work. That doesn't work. What really works is God's word and shepherding of that child mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Academia became the second part of their foundation. Their true foundation has to be their biblical worldview, how they really see, relate, and really walk their life with Christ, how they get to know themselves. And that was quite challenging for me, because you are trying to be in the world teaching a curriculum.
Yeah.
But you have to steer your mind into what the Lord really wants to say, and that is his word.
Now, you're working for a private school, Calvary Orlando. It's a Christian academy, and we know that the public schools today, a lot of those kids have never heard, we just came through Easter, they've never heard the Easter mm-hmm. story. So they don't have a biblical worldview. They don't have a Christian worldview that they can draw from. And yet I know you've come across a lot of those kinds of students too.
I had students that they will tell me right straight, hey, I don't believe in this God that you're talking about. You know, and for me, it was even more encouraging, because that was the mission field, to let them see through the word, through the Bible, what, you know, the amazing love story is all about. And
yeah.
that is Jesus dying for us, making that choice.
Yeah,
for us.
You just added a new job description, and that was evangelist on your
So right. I pretty much spent like out of my good years in Christian education, shepherding their minds and hearts, than mostly academics, because academics actually flourish when that mind gets to be restored, and that child gets to see the
yeah.
full potential, and that's the reward.
If you could offer advice to parents today who have a kid maybe that's not thriving like you've thrived, they are maybe having a difficult time, maybe they don't respect authority, what advice would you give to parents whose kids are like that?
Well, I had had parents that actually came to me and asked me, what can I do? The first thing I would say, I am not the one that you can ask that question for, but you need to ask the Lord, who can you send, Lord, to help and to support, to power and partner up with me to bring this child from the home to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons that it made a different, you know, desire for Christian education. The biblical world integration of really partnering up with the parent. We're not here to raise the child. We're here to empower the child with the truth. And then that truth needs to set them free.
I agree. I think there are a lot of parents that want to just be beyond the kids. They just want to dish them off to teachers to say, mm-hmm. hey, here's my kid. You fix them.
Yes. And I quite from my own experience had those kind of parents. But what we do at COCA, that's how I call us, is more likely the opposite, which kind of begins with the mindset of the parent restoration.
Right. Oh, that's good.
We say, we are here for you because the Lord have called your child to be here. And this is not an accident, okay? But you have to really self-commit yourself to really restore your family
yep.
to his course, you know? And it's a process for the parent, but at the same time, it's a process for the child. And it is so wonderful to see how many parents really gets to say yes, but they're also parents that say, oh, I thought you just will take care of this. And, mm-hmm. and those are the parents that really need that big support. They need to know the truth too.
They do. Now, one thing that you've lived through, and this was never around when I was a young guy, coming through a pandemic like we did with COVID. And I know that one of the big areas that it's often talked about, how its negative impact, it was on school systems and mm-hmm. particularly students who, for that 2-year period where there were a lot of still impacts, lockdowns, it really impacted these kids. Would you agree with that?
I would agree, because I remember clearly after this, you know, coming out of the pandemic season, a lot of the children were even craving more and more of that attention. There was a big social disbalance in education that it was quite overwhelming for me, because I was like, what is wrong with this culture season coming out of, you know, this pandemic? There is a lot of need, a lot of attention, a lot of craving for the me. But at the same time, academically speaking, most of our children really suffered academically, you know, up to years of retro education of what they could have had that experience, you know, in years of advancement. So we see a big overcoming, you know, of children being more insecure, not confident, their social well-being being a challenge for them. Their true identity has to be restored and built up. And that's what I think is the biggest challenge right now in Christian education. Yeah. That foundation of that self-identity, that confidence in the word, and that will set them free. So,
and we've got a term that we hear a lot about, and it's mental health. Mental health of kids, the way they look at it, if they're not believers, it's not all that different for a lot of believers. And so there are a lot of kids coming in that were affected with their mental health during the pandemic. And you're saying what one thing that you saw was they were needing more attention and desiring more personal attention for themselves. What else do you see maybe in the area of mental health that is a concern that you see right now?
I would say the lack of authority, you know, self-drivenness. It was a quite overwhelming session in that area, because I could see kids that would be like, well, my parents aren't, they don't care what I do. They just want me to move on or do things. And that lack of awareness was quite alarming, because yeah, we're in the world that is a fast pace and mm-hmm. technology yeah. is at the fingertips. But when you really, as a young person, gets to just put your full attention and potential on an electronic or a video game, to kind of fade away from you, from the parental attention, you know, that was a challenge, because most of our kids are like addicted in electronics. And I'm like, I don't quite remember as a child doing
no,
that.
No, we didn't have that back
and
then.
That's still a challenge for a lot of kids. I would see even at grocery stores, like little toddlers with iPads.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, in my heart is a grief. Because I'm like, that attention is turning into that feed, and that feed will turn into that big idol, and that big idol will be a big obstacle for them and the Lord.
My son turned 40, and this is a true story. When he was just like 1 year old, I remember that we would have the TV set on. And our TV back in that day, Bulgaria, was nothing like what you see today. It was a 19-inch television. And he'd be bouncing up and down on my lap, and I'd be talking with him. The TV's on in the distance. Some show would be playing, and it would be a show maybe like Andy Griffith, Mayberry, that kind of a show. All of a sudden, a commercial would come on, and my son's attention was like, his eyes would turn around, and I had the hardest time of regaining his attention until that commercial went off. And I saw early on there's some power that I still to this day, I don't presume to fully understand, but I believe the enemy is using these screens and all of this technology in a way to capture the attention of a lot of young people. And parents need to be wise to monitor that. Keep kids out of those screens. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's our biggest challenge today's day in Christian education, is really actually supporting the parent to really not deviate that attention.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to talk to you. Here, you can have the phone. Because your child is having that craving. It's okay to give that personal time and attention at a certain level. So it's a challenge every single day, I would say. And the enemy tries to attack in all directions. And even young people, high schoolers, I will see their big struggle, which is pretty much all these little idols around them that mm-hmm. try to keep that attention off the Lord. And that's our mission, to really refocus them back to His glory.
Give us the website for your school, COCA, as you told it a while ago, is what you call it. What is the website?
So our website is www.cocaacademy.org. And it's quite a blessing to share this little side note. My wonderful brother in Christ and vice principal, Mr. Matthew Jesse, was the authorship of that rewarding website, because mm-hmm. he say, why don't we do COCA Academy? Make it like a double C out there, so it can become unique. I'm like, indeed, we are unique. So let's do it correctly. So it's COCAacademy.org.
COCAacademy.org. And I really enjoy getting to know you. I love the fact of your faith, the fact that you have overcome so many things, and yet you're looking forward with a positivity that is contagious. So thank mm-hmm. you for that.
Thank you, Mike. And I do like to encourage every person out there to always consider Christian education.
That's beautiful.
Christian education has saved the way I see life, the way the Lord really shepherded us to do things for His glory. And I don't know if you quite remember, but the mission and vision of Calvary Orlando is three things, three pillars that will endeavor it, and that is to inspire, educate, and bring excellence to the glory of God.
That's beautiful.
One child at a time.
One child at a time. Well, Caria Cash, Headmaster, Calvary Orlando Christian Academy, thank you for being with me. And friends, thanks for joining us right here on Afternoons with Mike.